growing up in northeastern France with a father who was a passionate cyclist and a mother who worked as a physical education teacher, Rémi Clermont was perhaps destined to be a professional athlete. And it's exactly what he did, spending almost a decade as a pro kayaker, even becoming world champion. And all through his career, he spent time on the bike to maintain fitness and to spend time with his father. After kayaking, Rémi worked in IT with a job that took him to Nice, where he discovered the incredible roads of the Côte d'Azur, where the mild weather and challenging terrain creates the perfect training ground for professional cyclists, many who make their home there. The surroundings also inspired Rémi to continue to cycle. And it's on a ride one day where Rémi had a chance encounter with André Stewart, a tech entrepreneur who had invested in a small cafe in the hills above Nice. It was called simply Café de Cycliste, a small spot to meet for a ride and for coffee. Keenly observing cycling as a booming hobby sport, Rémi became obsessed with the clothing, poorly fitting, bright-colored garments covered in corporate logos. And so Rémi set out to make a jersey for the small cafe he got involved in, a passion project which would become his life's work. Almost 10 years later, Café de Cycliste is a fast-growing, widely respected brand in the ultra-competitive world of cycling kit. Rémi remains creative director, the key driver behind the company's simple, pared-down, high-performance garments for both men and women, which are a marriage of cycling's classic aesthetics and the French way of life. And because performance is as important as design, sure, Café de Cycliste does tight Lycra, but they also create elegant, smart pieces you can wear to the cafe or to work without looking like you've just finished a stage of the Tour de France. The coffee part of the company is also still important. Café de Cycliste now has a flagship shop and cafe right on the old port in Nice, a cafe in another cycling hotbed of Palma, Mallorca, and a boutique in London's Shoreditch area. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. For today's program, I sat down with Rémi at Midori House to hear the story of Café de Cycliste.
Well, we didn't start it as a big plan to do cycling apparel for the next 10 years, which is now what we've been doing. Essentially, it started a bit randomly. My business partner, André, and I were in between jobs. I just left my job. I was working in IT. I have a sport background. I've been racing in kayak for years. I studied sport, but at this time I was doing marketing in IT, which wasn't really my field or of comfort, I would say. So I wanted to change, and randomly, between jobs, we invested in a small cafe in the backcountry of Nice. And we were cycling, obviously. We loved cycling and we were passionate about cycling. Initially, I just wanted, so I'm the one that pushed to do some clothing so that we could have a little range just for the cafe at the beginning that would represent a bit more how we see cycling, because we saw cycling a bit differently, I guess, at most of the cycling brand at the time that drived what we did in the following 10 years. But initially, yes, it was just a small range for the cafe, so no bigger ambition than that initially.
I want to come on to some of the style and aesthetic and your inspiration for that, but I'd like to just hear first about how you got into cycling, because I understand you were riding with your father. You went on to be a professional kayaker, so quite different, but you were riding with your father and he was a big lover of the sport. He had a big passion for it, is that right?
Yeah, it's essentially that. Cycling is a passion sport, so when you grow up in a family where your dad is passionate, he's riding, he never raced, but it still is. I mean, whenever I've visit him in the northeast of France, I go cycling with him. That's the thing we always do together. So when you're brought in a family like that with a dad like this, you go during your holiday, you go and watch Tour de France, this kind of thing. You watch the race on TV. You just live in a cycling passion environment. And as a kayaker, in the winter especially, you have to do a lot of endurance training. You can't always do it in the kayak. So I obviously picked cycling to do my endurance in the winter. So I've always been cycling, initially mountain biking. Initially, when I was riding with Dad, he was road cycling, I was mountain biking. I was finding road cycling very boring and very non-sexy. But that's 20 years ago, when road cycling very likely wasn't as sexy as it is today.
Yeah, fair enough. And during your professional career as a kayaker, quite successful, you became a world champion, I believe. But was there something in that time where you started to think about your next career? I mean, obviously, you said you went into IT, but were you thinking about something broader where you might be running your own business one day?
Not at all. No, at this time, I was 100% focused on the kayaking. I was actually studying, I studied different studies. I started studying sport because I wanted to be a sport teacher like Mum. Very simple. I'm a kayaker. That's my life. I'm going to be a sport teacher. Then I realized it wasn't what I wanted to do, and I moved into a different thing and I studied business. But at this time, no, I had no big plan. I was just kayaking and cycling, sometimes even cycling too much. I remember some season I was cycling so much that it affected a bit my kayaking. So, but no, at this time, no business plan, just focusing on racing.
So you started off by mentioning the cafe that you did launch near Nice. And a lot of people that will think of the south of France will think of the sunshine and how beautiful Nice and nearby Monaco are. But not a lot of people do know, other than cyclists, that is an amazing place to go cycling and to get lost, close to the Alps, close to the Italian border. And a lot of professionals live there as well. So I'm curious about the scene around 10 years ago when you launched this brand and what sort of the market you saw for this was. A cafe obviously is obvious. Cyclists love to have a coffee. Mm-hmm. But what about the apparel and broader? What did you see there?
Well, clearly, yes. The region is famous for cyclists, and 10 years ago it was already, and pro cyclists have been living there for as long as we know. Like back in the 60s, they would come and live on the French Riviera to train, so that's nothing new. But when we started Café du Cycliste, obviously the style of what we did, because essentially we saw cycling as more than just a sport. This is why we created Café du Cycliste. So we can call it a lifestyle, but for me, cycling is just an outdoor activity and a lifestyle, yes. So when we're starting doing, and this just drives the way we do the clothing and the style we give to our clothing and how we present our brand and who we are. And when we're starting doing that, it wasn't very easy to sell that concept and that idea in France, especially in France, in the south of France, no more than in the north of France. Generally speaking, France is a very traditional cycling country. And initially, we didn't sell a lot in France. Even my dad, who was a cyclist for his whole life, and I was giving him free stuff, obviously. And then I would call my mom at the weekend asking her if he wears my stuff, and he wasn't. He was still wearing his club thing with his friend because it was too far away from, which made me realize pretty quickly that even if my dad, it's too much of a step for him to move to that, it's going to be difficult to sell immediately to the countries like France, like Italy, like Spain, which is today still not our biggest market because what we do is a bit different.
Yeah, I think you're mentioning sort of the more loud technical wear that has the brand sponsors or the club team kit, and it's a far cry from what you're making now, the sort of pared down, nice, clean aesthetic. So tell us about that and where the inspiration for that comes from, because I imagine this is meant to be clothing that you would be confident walking into the office to or sitting having a coffee. It's a little bit different.
Yes. Yeah. Well, the bottom line is, cycling is more than just the racing. It's for sure, it's a big part of it and we love it. And there's no doubt about it. It's part of our DNA, the racing and the history of road racing. But for us, the bottom line is it's way more than that. You can cycle because it's a tool to go to work. You can cycle to be healthy. You can cycle to travel, for adventure. You can cycle because your doctor's told you you need to lose weight. Whatever the reasons, and more, when we started and today it's growing, there's more than one reason and all of this becomes why people love cycling. And obviously, when the only reason is not anymore just to race, of course, racing with your friends up a climb is one of the fun elements of cycling, but it's just one. And when this is not the only reason, and the only reason is not just to try to gain 1 second because your jersey is more aero or these kind of stories, then obviously you expect something else from the design and from the aesthetic of the garment. So that's what we do. So inspiration come, generally speaking, from where we are. So France, French Riviera, where we ride. So this backcountry of Nice, because yes, Nice is famous for the French Riviera and the sun and the cocktails on the beach. But the reality is the backcountry of Nice very quickly is high mountains. You have Col de la Bonnette, which is 2,800 meters, the highest in Europe. And that's, you can cycle from Nice to this col. So it's where we are, and this is what inspires us. So it will go from tradition of cycling, of French garment making. So we used a lot initially of Breton stripe and a lot of stripe, which stays some of our iconic products. We're inspired by the mountain, by other sports, because also we see cycling as an outdoor activity. It's not just racing. Very often when I'm on my bike in the mountain in the backcountry of Nice with a friend or on my own, I feel as close in the spirit as someone who would be hiking in the mountain as someone on the Champs-Élysées racing the sprint in the Tour de France, or very likely closer to the hiker in the mountain. So for me, part of our sport is about being outside, being in the mountain, and that inspires as well the aesthetic of what we do.
So I think the first product was a jersey back in 2010, is that right? So
yes.
How far have you come since then? I imagine you've gone through a lot of steps to find the right manufacturers, the right suppliers. So what did that look like originally?
A struggle. Yeah. It was difficult, yes. Well, I had some ideas of what I wanted to do. I had no previous experience in garment making. So initially, I just worked with people to help me. I did a lot of research. I went to all the trade shows, the fabric trade shows, or the famous one you may know, like Première Vision Paris. And I just talked to all the fabric provider and asked all the stupid questions. And I visited a lot of factories and tell them about the project. But initially, I didn't even know how to make what we call a tech pack or a technical pack. So you just have a, let's say, a document that have all the elements of your product. So what fabric are you going to use? What's the consumption of this fabric? What zip are you going to use? All the detailing, all the specification. So I had to have people to help me do that initially. It's been a long process, but I found it very interesting and I love doing it. So it's been a lot of work at the beginning and then starting hiring people that have obviously the skill that I was missing to help me go through that more quickly.
I think you were doing this on your own for about 4 years before you even brought anyone else in to help you. But I'm curious about how sort of competition has shaped what you've been doing, because around this time, as you say, 10 years ago, there wasn't a lot out there that had a good aesthetic and was really thinking about good technical fabrics and garments. There's a lot of other players now. There's a lot of other companies that have come up in the same time. Has that shaped what you've been doing, or have you just been kind of focusing on your own thing?
No, I think, yeah, for sure today there's a lot of players, which is good, I think, for the customers, because back in the day, that's one of the reasons why we started, because there wasn't that much choice and we wanted something different. So I really like the idea that today, you can, if you want a jersey with a printed banana on it, you will find it. If you want a jersey, very simple, like whatever you want, almost you can find it on the market. So that's very good. It makes the things a bit competitive, but that's always a good thing. We like competition. I've always been in competition, so that really isn't something I have a problem with. What's important, I think, is just to follow your direction. For me, when I find the cycling clothing market a bit crowded is when you see brands, but you don't really know who they are, what they do, why they do this. And then it becomes a bit messy. You see a lot of similar looking thing. You don't really understand why people do what they do. So I think the most important for us is just to stay true to what we do and follow what we're doing.
You're in more than 80 countries now, some great stockists, but you also have three of your own shops now. Tell us about where that came into play and when you started thinking about that, because I believe Concept Shop maybe was 2016 in Nice you opened. So that's 5-6 years into your company.
Initially, we started in a cafe. So this is what we call Café du Cycliste, because we were a small cafe, a tiny thing up in the mountain above Nice. So that was already in there as a brand to have a physical place. And it made sense for the brand because cafe is where you meet, cafe is where you discuss. It's not just about the cycling, it's about the before, about the after, where you meet people and when you talk. So we liked the idea and obviously it was what we were. Then very quickly, the brand and the clothing became bigger than this small cafe up there. So we moved to Nice. First the office, and then yes, after 5 years of business, we decided to open a proper, like what we consider today our base, even if it wasn't the initial base, which is the concept store we have in Nice, in the port of Nice, facing the sea, when you can really there touch the brand, because you see what Café du Cycliste is about. We rent bikes. We try to make easy for locals and travelers to cycle in the Riviera. So we rent bike, we have maps, we help the people, we have a coffee, you can come and discuss, you can come and have a coffee, you can even come obviously if you're not a cyclist. A lot of people come because it's just a beautiful place by the sea, and a lot of cyclists come there to meet before the ride, after the ride. So we started this one after 5 years of business because it's basically, it should have been there from day one. It was there from day one, but we moved it to Nice essentially.
Yeah.
Then we have another retail store in London. And that's now been 18 months. And we have one in Mallorca. That's a year now. So 12 months. So we have three of our own shop. Two are, I would say, cycling destination, Nice and Mallorca. And I think that's important for us. And one, the decision was essentially driven because it's our first market, the UK. Maybe not anymore today, or it's competing for the first place. But it's always been a special place for us, the UK. My business partner is English as well. So it was a natural way to come to London.
Made sense. A lot of cyclists around these parts in London. Interesting, the location of the Nice Cafe, because it's right in the center. An incredible location, in fact. But I wonder how that changed things for you, because originally it was just, you know, I imagine a lot of that customer-facing part of the business was just online, because you were guys in an office away from this. But now it's right in front of your face. People are coming into the cafe. They're a big part of that. So how has that changed things for you?
Well, that's actually very important, because What we do, yes, most of our business, our revenue comes from our online shop, which is good for us, and that's no doubt that it's a good strategy for us. What's lacking there is obviously the contact with the, I guess, maybe it works perfectly when you sell washing powder or toothpaste or whatever, but when you cycling is really something about passion, and just online is a bit difficult to get the connection with the customer. So obviously, yes, having the cafe is a great thing, and having a place where people can come and just talk to us. Initially in the cafe there in Nice, by the port, the design studio was above the cafe with a big glass window, so we could be there every day, like literally seeing every customer or people were in competition, everything. We could see the cyclist every day in the office. When we would have our coffee break, we would go and talk with cyclists. Then it becomes a bit too small to have our studio there, so now we're just 500 meters from there and we have everything, the stock, and the whole company is based in a different place, but we still go to the cafe obviously every day, usually at lunch when we go for a ride. So yes, it's definitely important for us to be able to, even when I'm in London, to talk to cyclists. Even when I'm in London and I see those guys in the street commuting to work in the morning, and I see a lot of them, obviously they're not just using their bike to commute. I see it with the bike they have, I see the legs, and I know the cyclists, and I almost want to go to them and chat with them, because I feel I'm part of the same family, and I want, if I'm coming to tell them, well, next time I'm in London, let's go ride together. So for me, that's important. This is why we started the business, because IT was not my thing, and I'd rather spend my time chatting about sport with people I share the same passion. So that's still essentially existing today, even if it's been 10 years, and obviously there's a bit more than that, and there's all the more stressful element, but this element is still what's making me happy.
What is it, do you think, that inspires you or makes you the most happy in your roles? Because you're both co-founder, but you're creative director, so you keep that side of it because you really like to be involved in what that is, what the vision is, what the brand is. So how much of your time do you spend on that, on actually designing?
Luckily, more and more, because the struggle as a small company is you have to do everything and you never spend enough time on each element. So it's good that now we're growing, we can have more people and I can focus more on that. I would say I spend half of my time now really on the range, or maybe more, a bit more than half, just on the range, on the product and on designing and on driving the product and the direction of the brand, which goes beyond product, obviously. It's who we are, where we are, where are our shops. How do we communicate? What direction do we go? More than half of my time now, which is good. At the beginning, you know, it was just 10 minutes of that, 10 minutes of that. It was really stressful. Also, it's important to have time because, yes, there's lots of competition and there's a lot of things. Cycling moves very quickly. The practice, the trend, everything is moving very quickly in cycling in the last 10 years. So it's good to be able to spend a bit more time on understanding what's happening and talk to people, which is difficult in the initial days of a startup.
Do you feel that pressure? Because you mentioned how quickly the cycling is moving now with it becoming so popular and new products all the time. But also, you're partly in that fashion world as well, which has the rollover of seasons and the demand for new product and new lines. So do you feel that pressure?
I can feel it, yes. I wouldn't say pressure because this is part of what I like. So it's one of the reasons also I started this business, is because I like the idea of creation, you can call it. For me, I see it as observation and swallowing a lot of things and seeing a lot of things and then just coming out with my ideas. So this is what I find interesting and fun. So pressure is a big word, but yes, I can feel that obviously. As you grow and the company is getting bigger, you need to deliver, but not only on that side, on all sides of the business you need to deliver. But that's the nature of a growing company, and it's not just for my role. It's the reality is when it's just you initially, it's a lot of fun, because if nothing works, it doesn't matter. It only involves you. So if you mess up, it doesn't have a big impact. Today, obviously, yes, we need to be a bit more careful and there's more pressure as a business. But I don't feel really like this. I mean, I'm not from a fashion background, so fashion is big world for me, but I'm not stressed too much about the cliche of the fashion that has to renew itself every season, because for now, at least, it comes naturally. It's not a difficult thing to do.
We talked about the role as creative director, but I wonder about the other side of it, the business side of it as well. Are you enjoying that? Because there are obviously a lot of, we can use the word pressure again, on a growing brand, and it's quite difficult in this market, I can imagine. But you're doing well now, but how are you enjoying that role of leading the team, of running a business, growing the business?
At the beginning, has been a bit difficult, the first 5 years when you do everything on your own, then obviously you have to bury yourself into work and just carry on with it. But that may be because I'm a competitive kayaker initially. So I spent years waking up in the morning and focusing on something and not stopping until it works or until I achieve what I wanted. So I think that was more or less of a natural attitude for me. That's the positive side. I'm not worried about getting things done and working hard until it works. Where I'm a bit less good is into teamwork. It might also come from my kayaking background, because kayaking is an individual sport. You wake up in the morning, you take your kayak, your paddle, you have a coach that tells you roughly what you have to do, but you're on your own, basically. So I'm perfectly comfortable to be on my own, even in difficult situation or in challenging situation. Leading a team is maybe my weakness. Now, back to your question, I'm happy that the company is growing, because then I can have people that are in charge of their department. And as long as we hire the right people, and they are, which we do for now, and they are very autonomous and they are self-driven, then it's perfect. I'm not very confident. I'm not really good when you have to be behind your team all the time and supporting them and rewarding them, and what a real manager do. That's not my skill. Yeah. I'd rather have like good people. I know I can trust them. I know they will deliver, self-driven people.
Yeah, you hear that time and again on this show, the importance of building a team. And in a small company, a small growing brand especially, the importance of having people that have a little bit of their own entrepreneurial thinking. So they're thinking outside the box on their own. Well, perhaps that leaves you to continue wearing that creative hat, to continue driving. Is that where you strive then, leading by example and being the one that's sort of showing off the vision of what the brand is?
Yes, it's getting in place, I would say. One of the difficulty initially when I started hiring, because initially when you're the only one, the brand is you. It's simple. No one can go sidetrack or go something that is not consistent with who the brand is, because it's you and you're doing it. When you start working with people, whatever it is, it could be the people building your website, the people that work with you in the development of the product, the people who help you make the product description on the website, whatever it is. When you start to have to leave other people do it, it's quite difficult. And yes, for us, the easiest way is that I spend time with those people and I have a close relationship with those people. So they basically end up understanding how I see things and know clearly the people who work in marketing in our company or the people that I work with. I'm totally confident that they know where we're going and they have the same vision as me. And it's not that only I dictate the vision. Like maybe we have the same vision as a group of managers, four or five, because we're still a relatively small brand. We have 23 people. So it was like 5 to 6 important people that drive the direction of the company with me. And those people we share, we ride together at lunch, we share the same experience. So I'm pretty confident that we all share the same vision.
We've mentioned a few times that the company continues to grow. So give us a sense of where you're at right now. You're in quite a few markets. I imagine the US is a big one for you and the UK, but where's the company at? Where are you looking right now?
Yes, US is an interesting market. It's not the one of the biggest for us, yes, because we're not very active in the US. One of our difficulties, it's a difficulty, but it's quite positive for us. We sell really in 80 countries. There's not one country that represents 20% of our market. There's many countries that represent between 4 and 6%. So if there is an issue in a country, say Brexit, or if there is a bad weather in Germany in spring, we're not too affected. That's very positive. And the potential is big because we're already a bit in the US, we're already a bit in Asia, we're already a bit everywhere. So we can grow everywhere, and then the market is big because it's essentially the world. Obviously, the difficulty is when you do an activity, you can consider PR as an activity or marketing, because a number of countries, number of language, number of culture is quite challenging. But yes, we sell a bit everywhere in the world already. Main markets today are Northern Europe. English is a big one for us. It's always been from the beginning. But all the Northern Europe countries, Denmark, Netherlands, Germany, more than the South, which is very more likely a bit traditional about the aesthetic of cycling garment, I would say. Asia, we sell quite well in Hong Kong, Japan, Taiwan, Indonesia now as well. And then obviously America, yes. Mainly Northern America, USA is growing fast. But we know that very likely it's one of the big markets in which we are the most unknown, almost, because it's difficult to be everywhere at the same time. But yes, growing in all the countries, so big potential. Just need to get organized to to touch all those markets.
And how do you organize that then? Because I imagine, I mean, there's a bit of luck here, because with the way that we consume now and we buy things online, and it's possible to be a direct-to-consumer brand from the website to get a bit of traction there. But how do you continue to grow that in that sense?
Well, there's a lot of luck there, yeah, because without that, we wouldn't exist. So it was initially how we did it, very simply. All of our marketing has very quickly had to be in English. So we are a very international team. We even have a team of 4 in London. And in Nice, this maybe half of the company is not French people or not native French people. That was a good thing, yes. How do we keep growing now from there? For the moment, it works like that. We just do the same thing, which is sharing the passion of what we do, and almost naturally the growth came. Of course, we start to build some tool. We do a bit more this type of marketing, a bit more advertising, obviously, as we get a bit of budget. But so far, we've only grown the company organically. We self-funded the company initially, and we only invest the money we make every year. So we don't suddenly come a year with a massive advertising budget on the table. So we just grow step by step. That's another thing. I think what I see in cycling, there's a number of, because it's been a booming market, there's a number of companies that raise money, and a bit in an IT scenario world. So you try to, you know, gain market share as quickly as possible. Obviously, I guess sometimes not being profitable, like a race for being the first comer and gaining market share. We try to have a more from the beginning, obviously, because we need to pay ourselves and to be profitable. So from the beginning, we try to take it really step by step, which doesn't mean we're not growing fast, because obviously we are growing fast, and we've been ranked quite as fast-growing company lately in business journals. But still, we only grow at a pace that is sustainable, and that means we essentially keep having a simple strategy that we increment step by step.
Were you conscious of that early on? Because today, a lot of these brands, as you say, they grow like tech companies. They just try to attract as much investment as they can so they can rapidly grow and get out there. But were you conscious of that you wanted to sort of move slowly?
Yes, for me, I mean, that's more my personal attitude, but I don't even like to borrow money to the bank myself. So, yes, I when we started it, I wanted to create a company that is sustainable. So I left the IT business, which there's nothing wrong with the IT business, and I loved it, and it was very interesting, but I left the IT business and wanted to work in a company that I can work in it for the next 20 years, and we're going to grow that company. And it doesn't mean one day, of course, we're not going to have investments, because growing like this is challenging from a cash perspective, because as you grow, you need to produce more, and obviously it has its challenge. So at some stage, if needed and if there is an opportunity, we can have investment in the company, but it won't change the strategy. It won't change the fact that we could go a bit faster, obviously, but it won't change the fact that we want to grow a business that is sustainable, because I don't believe that we're still in a very small, relatively small business, which is cycling apparel. So I don't think the fast growing is sustainable in the long term. My value for the company is as well.
I'm curious about how you categorize yourself as a brand. Is it distinctly French? Because so much of the pattern and the design harkens back to sort of the history of the country and of cycling. So how do you present that? And is that important for the brand overall?
Yes. I think we're French. That's absolutely no doubt, and it's important. It's a big element in our DNA. I would say French, and even more like where we are based, the French Riviera, because we didn't plan it really at the beginning, because this is where we live and this is where we created the business, and we didn't have a big plan to say, oh, we're going to, like if we are a surfing brand, we're going to create our business in the west coast of America, because this is where the surfing comes from. We just happened randomly to do it there, but now we realize, yes, if you want to sell surf shorts or surfboards, it's easier if you're from LA or from Australia than if you're from Paris. That's pretty obvious. And today we're lucky. We are in the mecca of cycling. So it's very important for us, yes, where we are and the nationality of the brand and even the region in which we are is very important to us.
Thank you very much to Rémi Clermont, co-founder and creative director of Café des Cyclistes, for coming by to share his story. You can see some of the brand's garments in Monocle's Summer Style Guide, out now in our July-August issue. Thanks as well to Kieran Matthew Banerjee, who mixed and edited this program. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.